Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Question from Sarvagya Prabhu. He says, in Anucheda 44.6, it is said that if the Supreme Lord was impersonal, he would have appeared within the heart of Gajendra and would have freed him from within. How is it possible? What is the logic and mechanics of such an action? Well, I don't know if it fits within material mechanics and logic, but we are told in the Upanishads that Veda Nihitam Guhayam, that the absolute truth, the impersonal absolute truth, Brahman, is realized within the heart. We have to accept that on the authority of the Upanishads. Then we can try to figure out how it happens, but we have to accept that it does happen. The generic or impersonal feature of the Supreme is perceived within the heart. And the Mayavadis, they have their idea that there is such a formless realization, and that gives you liberation, Brahman realization. Brahma Sakshatkara. We're questioning, how is that possible? You know, how is the impersonal going to appear in your heart, and how are you going to perceive it, and how is that perception going to free you? This is being presented as a Purvapaksha anyway. So from the point of view of the Mayavadis, they believe it's possible. They can't really explain how it happens. It's a mystic process. Yeah. We understand that the so-called impersonal feature is not a separate entity. It's the personality of Godhead. And by his personal potencies, he can enlighten the soul from within the heart without showing his personal form. You know, in an impersonal form, he can give enlightenment by his power of enlightenment. So it's possible, because it's the Supreme Person using his energies. But impersonalists don't generally see some external form of Brahman, because he doesn't have any form. There's no external form because there's no form. So the only place they can do their realizing is inside. You're questioning, well, what form does it take if it has no form? And that's a good question. But somehow the Mayavadis believe it happens by just mystically. And we understand it can happen by the Lord's personal energies. He doesn't have to show his personality. He can act apparently impersonally, although he's a person using his energies. And he can awaken the heart to enlightenment from inside. That's the best I can say about that. And then you also explained that I said that this was the last verse of Gajendra's prayers. It's not. I don't think I wrote that. I think I just said that. I'll check the manuscript. I don't think it's in the manuscript here.
Also in the same line of question, because question was some situation, problem was in the external world, and the Purvapaksha is that Krishna will just manifest in the heart, and somehow from the heart will manage this external world situation.
You mean how is he going to get free from being bit by a crocodile by seeing something inside?
Yes, just manifest inside and somehow free it.
Well, the Mayavadis, as far as the Mayavadis are concerned, is it's all a dream. The crocodile biting your leg is just a dream. So realize that you're Brahman and you won't hurt anymore. And the crocodile will go away. That's how the Mayavadis take it. The Bhagavatam is not presented that the Lord appeared on the outside. It's just hypothetical about him appearing on the inside. It's mostly the impersonalists who have that conception. Yes.
You're mentioning how the Lord appears to be void or impersonal. Actually, he's not And I just remember the verse in Bhagavatam. It says, "Yatad Brahma Param Sukshmam Ashunyam Shunya Kalpitam."
Kalpitam.
Yeah. So Ashunyam Shunya Kalpitam means he is not empty, but he appears to
be. He's imagined to be empty, but he's not empty. Okay. All right. So we move back into the Anuchheda. We're on 45.4. The Lord was telling in the Moksha Dharma that apparently he's talking like a Mayavadi, but you know, don't think that I really have a form. I could destroy this form at any time I want, and it's just my Maya. But actually, the proper explanation is just my Maya that you think this is a material form. I don't have a material form, is the point that he's actually making. He doesn't have a form that appears to the external senses as an object of ordinary perception. In that sense, he doesn't have an ordinary material form. So, we read this about Upachari Vasu. So I guess we didn't read this last paragraph. Okay. Tatahi tatraiva shri bhishma vachanam. Tatraiva means in the same Moksha Dharma section of the Mahabharata, this is because the Moksha Dharma is part of Bhishma's instructions to Yudhishthira. He taught him about all kinds of dharma, including Moksha Dharma. So that's the section called the Moksha Dharma. It's all narrated by Bhishma. He tells this story about Upachara Vasu's sacrifice, and Bhrigu got angry because he couldn't see Vishnu, even though Upachara could. So that's all told by Bhishmadeva. And Bhishmadeva now makes a comment in that passage, in that section. Pritas tatosya bhagavan deva deva sanatanaha sakshatam dashayamasa drishyo nanyena kena chit. In the same narration, there is also the statement by Sri Bhishma. Pleased with him, the personality of Godhead, eternal Lord of Lords, directly revealed a form which no one else had ever seen. Tam upachari vasum prati swatmanam iti shesha. So to fill out the missing parts of this statement, because darshayamasa is transitive. It should take an object, but there's no object in the sentence. So the object is supplied by Jiva Goswami. The implied completion of this statement is that it was himself he showed. And Upachara Vasu, he showed himself too. So himself, his own body, is the object, main object, and the indirect object, the person to whom he showed that body, is Tasmai, that's not there. To him, to Upachara Vasu, is also implied. Tadagrecha Vasvadi Vakyam. After this, Vasu and others said the following. Nashakya sa tvaya drashtum asma birva brihaspate yasya prasadam kurute sa vaitam drashtum arhati. O brihaspati. So Brihaspati got angry and Vasu is explaining, pacifying him. O brihaspati. He cannot be seen by you or by us either. Only that person whom he favors can see him. Tadevam shutav ap yadrishatwari dharma shrivigrahasyai vokta. Along the same line, one Shruti states that the Lord's divine forms have such qualities as invisibility. And another Shruti says, Shrutantranam cha nachakshusha pashyati rupam asya iti. Okay. That means one cannot see his form with the eyes. Not visible in the sense of something that we can see with these eyes. Nrigak Sri Bhagavantam. The verse under discussion, Bhagavatam 10:64-26, was spoken by Nriga to the personality of Godhead, to Krishna. Commentary. The verse cited here refers to Lord Shvetadvipapati's revelation of himself to Narada. When Uparichara and his guests attending his sacrifice explained to Brihaspati that only a specially favored devotee can see the Supreme Lord, they were echoing the eternal words of the Upanishads. The Upanishads affirm that God's personality incorporates unlimited transcendental qualities, and even those qualities which are described in negative terms, like his not being seen by ordinary eyes, they are nonetheless real qualities. It's not just negative. It is a quality to be invisible. It's a power. And if someone can make himself invisible, he can go do whatever, rob a bank and nobody will see him. That's a power. It's a positive power. Adrisha Twadi Gunako Dharmok Tehi. The invisibility and so on of the Supreme are real qualities of his, since in the same texts that affirm these negative qualities, many other positive qualities are also ascribed to him. That's Vedanta Sutra, Adrisha Twadi Gunako Dharmok Tehi. The Upanishads say he doesn't have any qualities, or it says that he has these negative qualities, which the impersonalists might say they're not qualities, they're just negations. He's not visible, he's not this, he's not that. But the same Upanishads, the same part of the Upanishads that talks about him not having these negations, talks about him having positive qualities also. So these are also qualities, invisibility and so on. Now, I have a question. Upacharavasu saw. Oh, actually, Narada saw. Okay, there's two different stories here. I was a little confused. One story is about Upacharivasu seeing the Lord, another is Narada going to Shvetadvipa and seeing the Lord. Actually, it's a story within a story. When Brihaspati got angry, the three brothers, Ekata, Dvita, and Trita, told him about Narada, who went to Shvetadvipa and saw the Lord, even though no demigod before had ever seen him. Okay, so the two stories there. But this verse is... The verse cited here is specifically about Narada, the one spoken by Bhishma. Okay, now we have to move into the next file, file 12. 34. That's not counting the Sarvasamvadini. Anucheed 46. Five. Six. I'm counting how many paragraphs. It's a big one. 11. 13. It actually is more than 13. It's more than one file. It's a huge anucheed. Okay. Starting. 37 paragraphs. Ata eva tatra prakritani rupadini nishidya anyani sampratipadyante. Therefore, material form and so on are denied him, and different ones are acknowledged. Different forms and names and so on. He doesn't have material, but there are forms and names that he does have. And that's stated here in a verse from the 8th canto, still, 3rd chapter, We were in the sixth chapter. Now the third chapter of the eighth canto. Same. This is still Gajendra. Gajendra was the third chapter. Okay. Navidyate yasya cha karma. No. Navidyate yasya cha janma karma va. Nanama rupe gunadosha eva va. Tatapi lok apyaya sambhavaya swamaya tanyanukalam richati. He has no birth or activity, no name or form, no qualities or faults, gunas or doshas. But for the creation and destruction of this world, he assumes all these permanently by his own maya. Okay, anukalam, you might say, just he does it at suitable times, according to the time. But Jiva Goswami, he takes it later on, he'll see that he takes it to mean he does it permanently. He assumes names and forms and qualities, not just temporarily, not just as a temporary illusion, but he does it eternally. He doesn't have names and form, but he has eternal names and forms. Those are not material names and forms, they're a different kind. Ayam Artaha, Jiva Goswami's explanation. The meaning of this is follows. Avastantara praptir vikara. Tatra pratamo vikara janmeti. And then at the end of the sentence, iti prakriti jay loke drishyate. As we observe in the natural world, transformation, that's the word, vikara. No, the word vikara is not in the verse. Okay, but in general, these are vikaras that are described in the verse. Transformations. And what a transformation means, it means to obtain a different state. If I disappear here and Bhagirata all of a sudden appears sitting here, that's not a transformation. That's one person, you know, being transported to a different place. But if I suddenly get 10 years older, that's a transformation. The same entity has changed its qualities. Not that one entity is substitute for another, but the same one entity changes. That's called a transformation, or vikara. Yogurt is considered a transformation of milk. But if I say, I don't want milk, bring me a cup of apple juice, and you take the cup of milk away and put in a cup of apple juice, that's not a transformation, it's a substitution. Vikara, these are transformations, not some magic trick of, you know, pulling a rabbit out of your hat where, you know, the rabbit was really hiding under the table. It's a substitution. No, it's a transformation. These are transformations we're talking about, not just switching around objects. It's not that the real absolute truth has no qualities and we sneak in some phony absolute truth with qualities as a substitute. No, the same absolute truth has qualities. So, he doesn't have janma, karma, nama, rupa, guna, dosha. Transformation means to obtain a different state. Tatra pratama vikaro janmeti. Apurnasya nijapurtyarta cheshta karmeti. Birth, among such states, birth is the first transformation. Okay? If you don't know what birth is, then you can look up somewhere else. We're assuming you know what a birth is, so we just say it's the first transformation. Activity, karma, is the endeavor of an incomplete person to fulfill his aims. If you have everything you need, you don't need to do anything. You just sit around and do nothing. Nama. Mano grahyasya vastuno vyavahar artam kenapi sanketitak shabdo nama. Now, what's a name? A name is a word. Okay, a name is a word. That's true. What kind of word? It's a word which has been assigned by convention to facilitate the practical use of some object accessible to the mind. So a name is a conventional object, and it has a specific purpose. You want to do something or with or to something or somebody, you have to be able to name that something or someone in order to describe doing something in conjunction with or to that thing or person. It has to have a name in order to talk about it. So by convention, we assign a name that facilitates us relating to the entity and doing something with him. But he doesn't have any names, according to this. And let's see. Chakshusho grahyoguna rupamiti. Form is the quality perceived by the sense of sight. There are different qualities. Rupa is one quality. Rupa is understood as the quality that's perceived by sight. Rupa can mean an actual form, a shape. It can mean just visible form in general, in a more abstract way. I may see just spots in front of my eyes. That's also visible form, although it's not any particular shape. And also, rupa can sometimes mean color. Colors are also visible. In general, whatever is visible, whatever is perceivable by sight is called rupa. It's by definition, the quality, the proper quality, specific quality perceived by the sense of sight. You don't see hot and cold. You don't see sounds. You see visible form. Satvadi prakrita guna nidano dravyas yotkarsha hetu dharma vishesho guna iti prakriti jay loke drishiti. We also see in the ordinary world, in the material world, that a guna, or a good quality, is a special feature of a concrete object derived from the material modes of goodness and so on, which imparts excellence to the object. Well, the Supreme doesn't have such things. It's not a concrete object to start with, and it doesn't have qualities derived from the material modes. It's got some other kind of qualities. It is a kind of object, but not a concrete object, and not one that has material qualities. So he doesn't have any guna, according to that scientific definition of what a guna is. As far as we're concerned in the material world, when we're dealing with hard facts in the material world, we can define guna, good quality, as a special feature of an actual physical object, and that good quality is something derived from the material modes of goodness and ignorance and passion. And, well, some qualities are not good. They're bad qualities, deficits or deficiencies. I may have a limp. That's not a good quality. It's a bad quality. But the clause is added, which imparts excellence to the object. Dravyasya otkarsha hetu. Then it's a guna. Otherwise, it's a dosha. Imparts excellence to the object. Dravyasya otkarsha hetu. Utkarsha, excellence. Now the commentary. This anuchet begins with the... Now remember, this verse is going to be the subject of discussion for the next 37 paragraphs. You might try to remember it. The Lord doesn't have any of these things. He doesn't have birth, he doesn't have activity, he doesn't have name or form, good or bad qualities. But he takes all of these eternally in a different way. That's the Vishayavakya that will be the subject of discussion for the next two files. Three files, right? This anuchet begins with the word therefore, which connects this point in the discussion with what was proven earlier, that the personal forms of the Supreme Lord are without exception all pervading in time and space. Okay, we already had discussed that. Or in other words, that his forms are eternal and infinitely big. Texts, Anucheds 26 to 29, establish that the Lord's form is eternal, or nitya. And texts 30 to 45 establish that the Lord's form is vibhu, unlimited in size. Okay, we've done that already. Because of these two established facts, therefore, the personality of Godhead never takes a material form limited in time and space. That he has many forms, not just one, is known from abundant historical evidence recorded in the Puranas and other scriptures. So many avatars, so many expansions are described of the same one absolute truth. Avatara hi asankhyaya harir sattva nidirndvija. O Brahmanas, Lord Hari is the reservoir of all goodness, sattva-guna. He has unlimited, uncountless expanded forms. Yata vidasi nakulya, just like the tributaries that enter into a lake. That we have some lakes that dry up. Other lakes have so many tributaries entering into them that they never dry up. Avidasi, undepletable lake. Never, no matter what, how long the drought goes on, there's always water in this lake. Water coming from below, water coming from so many tributaries. Like that, the Supreme Lord has countless eternal forms. His forms are like the tributaries that enter the lake. In the material world, a person is born if he does not exist before, at least not in the same form. Okay, actually, his soul's eternal, but the body's not. So the body dies and a new body is born. So taking birth requires first dying. If you never die, you're never going to take birth again. Activities, if you were eternal, then you're never born. You always were. Activities are performed by one who has needs to fulfill. Names are assigned to people and things for use in the ordinary dealings of life. So, they make you, when you're born, you have to have a name. They make your parents have to put a name on the birth certificate. And in Russia, you have to have an atchestva, you have to have a patronymic name, even if you come from some, you know, Muslim, you know, Caucasus nation where they don't use it. For Russian usage, you have to have a father's name. That's because the government requires to categorize you, to know who you are and where to find you. So you have to have a name for practical purposes. So the Supreme Lord doesn't have such names. He doesn't have to have a passport. His mother didn't have to give him a name to put on the passport, on the birth certificate. He doesn't have a birth certificate. The birth. Okay. Forms are perceivable as sensations received by the sense organs of material bodies. Okay. Well, the sense organs of material bodies can't perceive his form. So he's not a form by the ordinary. He doesn't have a form according to the ordinary definition. Good qualities are relative excellences among the things produced by the three modes of material nature. They're produced by material nature, these material gunas, and also they're just relative, they're not absolute. These kinds of birth, activities, names, forms, and virtues are completely absent in the Supreme Person. Just by the ordinary definition of these terms, he doesn't have any. We're not just speaking poetry here. This is scientific. He doesn't have, by the scientific definition of what's a quality, what's a form, what's a name, he doesn't have any. According to material science and material logic. So it's not just the poet is playing games with us, telling he has form, he doesn't have form. It's a scientific fact. He doesn't have any of these things. Okay, next paragraph. Continuing the gloss on this verse. Vyasya cha sarvada swarupa statvat purnatvat manasopi agocharatvat swaprakashatvat prakriti atitatvat. That's about five reasons. Twat, 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 twat. Well, for all these reasons, tani na vidyante. Okay, in order to read the translation, I'm going to have to get to the end of the sentence, so bear with me. Tatapi yas tani richati prapnoti tasmai namaha iti uttara shlokein anvayaha. That's it. Obeisances to him, tasmai namaha. According to the completion of the statement in the next verse. Okay, the namaha is in the first verse, but you'll understand who we're offering obeisances to in the second when you read the second verse. The statement in the next verse, to him who has none of these qualities. Because he is all, why does he have none of these qualities? Okay, here's the reasons, several reasons why he doesn't have any of these features. Because he's always situated in his original identity. So he doesn't have to take birth, he doesn't have to change. He's complete, he doesn't have to do anything, because he's not missing anything. And because he's outside, if you have a refrigerator full of nice food, you don't have to go out and work to make money to buy food. So he's got everything. He's completely stocked up. He doesn't need to do to work to do anything. Name partasti kartavyam. I don't have anything that I need to do within the three worlds. I may do something because I want to do it, but there's nothing that I have to do. Trishu lokeshu kinchana. At least within this material world, I have no obligations. Anavaptam avaptavyam. And there's nothing which I am lacking, and therefore I don't have to work to get anything. Varta eva chakarmani, still I act. For my own reasons, I act. Okay. Anyway, because he's situated, he doesn't have any of these features. Name, form, quality, and so on. Because he's always situated in his original identity, because he is complete, because he is outside the reach even of the mind, I may not be able to actually get my hands on you, but I can think about you. You know, I've got you captured in my mind, even if I can't physically capture you. But the Supreme Lord, you can't even capture him in the ordinary mind. He's outside the reach even of the mind. And because he's self-luminous, and because he's beyond material nature. But even though he doesn't have any of these features, he nonetheless gains or acquires these features. Ata eva shrutyapi nishkalam nishkriyam shantam ityadau ashabnam asparsham arupam avyayam ityadau cha tan nishidyapi sarva karma sarva kama sarva gandak sarva rasaha ityadau vidyate. Thus in Shruti also, although these features are denied in such phrases as without parts, without activity, and at peace, nishkalam nishkriyam shantam, that's the absolute truth. And also it's said about the absolute truth, ashabdam asparsham arupam avyayam. Not an object of sound, or of touch, or of visible form, and imperishable. But still, there is affirmation in various texts that he has all activities, all desires, all fragrances, all tastes. Guna dosha itya paramarta twad, guna eva dosha ityartaha. The phrasing guna dosha, that can be taken as a dvandva samas, but there's another way to read it. It indicates that even a quality is a fault. It's dosha, it's gunas that are really doshas. What kind of dosha? There are dosha doshas. just obviously are false, and then there's things that appear to be qualities, good qualities, and they're actually guna doshas. They're doshas disguised as gunas. So the phrasing guna dosha indicates that even a quality is a fault when it is not spiritual. Tato ruta doshas tu sarvadana sambhavat yeve divyajate. And this further implies that there is no question of his having what are commonly known as faults. He doesn't even have so-called qualities which are really faults in the material world. Well, to speak of what's recognized as a fault in the material world, there's no question of him having any of those faults. Okay. Commentary. Anyway, this may be tedious, but once you get through this and you understand what's being said, then you know what is God, and you can explain it to somebody. And do it on the basis of Srimad Bhagavatam. Commentary. The Supreme Lord has no birth, because in his true identity, he is in his true identity perpetually. Okay? We change forms, and therefore we take birth. But if we're in the same form all the time, eternally, there's no birth. He has no activities to perform because he's complete in himself. What it is that Jiva Goswami gave all the reasons. Now, in the commentary, I'm matching up the reasons with what they're reasons for, in case there's any confusion. So, the Supreme Lord has no birth because he is in his true identity perpetually. He has no activities to perform because he's complete in himself. Jiva Goswami said he's complete in himself, but we had to guess what that's a reason for. I'm telling you. That's why he has no activities to perform. He has no names because the mind cannot comprehend him. Okay, to name somebody, you've got to have an idea of him. You've got to have some concept of something before you can give it a name. You have to be aware that it's present, that it exists. Then you can name it. He has no forms because he is self-manifesting. He has no excellences because he's altogether outside the material creation. He has none of these in their material aspects, but he possesses them all in their pure spiritual essence eternally. Here, the word richati is glossed as he obtains. Okay, what does that mean? That means he doesn't have it eternally. If he obtains it, that means he didn't have it before. So what does it mean? Which might be thought to indicate the acquisition at a particular time of something not previously possessed. But this misunderstanding will be dispelled below in paragraph 7. So hold off on that. The verse following the one under discussion, the verse we quoted, Navidyate yasyacha karma, the verse right after that starts, or it is, Tasmai namo pareshaya brahmane nantashaktaye arupayorurupaya nama ascharya karmane. There's where the namaha, tasmai namaha, comes, the second verse after the one quoted. He has immense potencies and in various forms, all free from material contamination. He acts wonderfully. He is therefore the supreme Brahman. I offer my respects to him. That's Gajendra praying? Okay. Declarations may be found in revealed scripture which seem to contradict one another. As, for example, statements on the one hand that the supreme has no qualities, and on the other hand that his qualities are unlimited. Srila Ramanuja, the Acharya who explained Vedanta philosophy for the Sri Vaishnav Sampradaya, because the Sri Sampradaya is much older than Ramanujacharya, but they wrote ecstatic poetry. They didn't write on Vedanta previously. He's the one who wrote a systematic commentary on Vedanta and made their Sampradaya officially Vedantic. So he wrote his Sri Bhashya, And he wrote a few other books explaining Vedanta philosophy. So Srila Ramanuja, the Acharya who explained Vedanta philosophy for the Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya, explained in his Vedanta Sangraha how to deal with apparent contradictions in Shruti. He gives a method. If two groups of statements seem to conflict, one or the other group must be interpreted in a qualified way to make a reconciliation, since nothing Shruti says can be false. Where the scriptures state that Brahman has no qualities, that must mean that he has no qualified material qualities. Add the qualification, material. The descriptions in Shruti of Brahman's qualities can then stand uncontradicted without having to be qualified. Then when we describe the qualities, we don't have to add anything to those descriptions. That can be taken literally. He really has those qualities, as said, without any metaphorical reinterpretation. The compound word guna dosha can be read in two different ways, as virtues and faults, or else virtues which are faults. From the spiritual point of view, everything in the material world is faulty, including so-called virtues. And what is normally called a fault in the realm of matter cannot be a fault when it appears in the personality of the Supreme. He may seem to be angry at his enemies and erotically attracted to his girlfriends, but there is no fault in either emotion, as there often is when they appear in ordinary people. Okay, so he's got apparent faults, which are not faults, and he's got qualities which are not, as they are in the material world, actually faults. He's got no faults, real or apparent. Okay, we're going to stop here for today. Any questions, just write them down or send them. And we'll deal with them at the beginning of class. Okay, thank you. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.